Monday, April 16th, it's the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education. It's actually the ideal subcommittee today, so far, with these members. Anyway, a couple of announcements. So first, there's actually an overflow room. That would be room 50, which is downstairs, if anyone wants to go in the overflow room. But the way we're going to try to organize this today is I have a list of panels supplied by the department. I'm going to go through, we'll go through those panels. And then following that, I'm going to start by calling up people who've traveled more than 100 miles. And I'll call, I'm going to have, even though you might not have traveled together, I'm going to call three people up at a time, just for time's sake. And obviously, because of the number of people we have, to get as many, to allow as many of you the opportunity to testify, I'm going to ask that you be brief. We just had Ways and Means, full Ways and Means Committee hearings on the road, and we had testimony that was about 2 minutes in length for each person, and that seemed to work actually pretty well. And 2 minutes, I know, is not a lot of time, but we have a lot of people, and so if we can try to be along that length of time. There's also a possibility, and I might get in trouble with the other committee members, but they're not here except for Representative Jensen. Tomorrow, there's a possibility we could continue on tomorrow, but I'd like to do as much as we can today, and we'll have to kind of see how it goes. So with that, I'd like to... Did I open up a public hearing? No, I didn't. Okay. So I'm opening up a public hearing on House Bill 5012, which is the Department of Community College and Workforce Development. And first I'd like to call up a panel on Skill Up Oregon. We've got Peggy Miller, Chuck Forster, and Duke Shepherd. And if there's anyone else who thinks or knows that they should be part of that panel, please come on up. These lists are not always 100% comprehensive. And then on deck, or next, will be the panel on career pathways, work readiness, and healthcare. Andrew McGough, Roger Aubert, I don't know if it's the same, Kathleen Coots, David Goldberg, and Jesse Gamis. And I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. Please don't take it personally. You can mispronounce mine. So, with that...
But it's Galizio.
Thank you.
Chair Galizio, Representative Jensen, and the other members of the subcommittee. My name is Peggy Miller, and I'm a business member of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. I've been a part of the board for 2 years and involved with a strategic plan and also a technology employer here in Oregon. And I'm here to tell you, I'm here to speak in support of the Skill Up Fund and in support of that fund at the governor's recommended budget of the $10 million. Let me tell you why. Over the course of my professional business career, all of which has been here in Oregon, I've had the opportunity to observe the changing business climate, particularly with respect to workforce issues. The business environment in which I made my career and money is not the same as will confront our employers and our employees in the future. It's going to be far more competitive, far more dynamic, far more complex than anything we've had to confront before. The co-chair's budget, as it's presently constituted, did not allocate any funds for the skill-up fund. We're asking this committee to support restoration at the governor's recommended level of $10 million. And let me tell you what the skill-up funds would do. They would be used for individual workers who need specific skills to qualify for employment or improved employment, leading to higher wage jobs. The skills training contemplated by this program would be basic skills like math and language and technical skills to prepare for shortage occupations such as welding, truck driving, construction trades, entry-level health care, and this also includes apprenticeship programs. This fund gets the low-skilled workers in the door and on their way to higher wage opportunities. Now, the Oregon Workforce Investment Board asks you to support this because we have a proven track record of demonstrating that skills training leads to higher wage jobs. We've, over the past 3 years, we've funded 417 projects in 15 regions, and these are local investments in your communities, and this fund would go out to your individual communities and benefit your workers there. It's created more than 2,300 jobs. It's provided industry-recognized certification for more than 10,000 workers, and the training's gone to 23,000. But those funds are limited by federal dollars. They're very constrained in how we can use them, and frankly, it doesn't even touch the need. And there's over 260,000 adults, over 15% of the labor force between ages 16 and 59, who are no longer in school and do not have a high school diploma. We want these workers to benefit from the increased skills training, and we want them to be able to improve their economic well-being using the Skill Up Fund. The Oregon Workforce Investment Board is a 25-member business and labor-led advisory board to the governor. We guide the WorkSource Oregon system of services in Oregon with and through seven local workforce investment boards in coordination with multiple state agencies. We support an increase in revenue through an increase in the corporate minimum tax if that increase goes to fund workforce development. So we're putting our tax dollars, we're supporting your tax dollars where we're recommending that we ask you to spend them. We are proposing and ask you to support the Skill Up Fund at $10 million to directly help these lower-wage workers move into higher-paying, high-opportunity jobs. We talk about family-wage jobs for Oregonians. This is a program that turns that talk into action.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And I tried to pair down.
I appreciate it. And I forgot to say at the beginning that also, if you do have written testimony, of course we will take it, and members of the committee will read it. And I do appreciate that was. It's fantastic.
And I think the testimony has been provided to you. If it is not,
yes,
it is available.
Yeah, it has. So thank you very much, Ms.
Thank
Blair.
You.
Good afternoon, Chairman Glazio and members of the subcommittee. I will try to talk as fast as I can. I'm not sure I can move do it quite so quickly, but I will do my best. I'm the executive director of the Lane Workforce Partnership. We are a local workforce investment board in Lane County, Oregon. We are a business-led organization and overseen by a board of directors that are primarily from business as well as from labor, education, and a variety of nonprofit organizations.
Mr. Forrester, this is something else I forgot to say. Is first thing, you want to state your name for the record. So,
okay. My name is Chuck Forrester, Executive Director of the
Lane Workforce Partnership.
Thank you. I apologize for that. I'll spare you information on all the data and all that. I think Peggy did a good job of talking about the need, and I'll spare you talking about the need again. But I do want to share with you one thing that information we received just last week. We recently completed a survey of 29 manufacturers in Lane County, and specifically around workforce. And when we asked them what workforce issue is of most concern to you as you look toward the future, 84% said maintaining a skilled and motivated workforce, and 77% identified finding qualified applicants as a major concern. When we asked them about the economic impact of a shortage of skilled workers, 57% of the respondents reported lower overall productivity, 50% reported reduced output in sales, and over 64% indicated that a shortage of skilled workers will reduce their ability to expand in the future. So clearly the need for a skilled workforce is very, very critical to Oregon businesses. The investments that local workforce boards have to help address that worker shortage tends to be limited solely to federal workforce investment funds. And as Peggy said, those often aren't the most flexible funds, but nonetheless, I think we do our best to get the most out of that revenue. We use those resources to target training in high demand, higher wage occupations in growing sectors in our community. Let me give you an example. Over the past year, we've trained over 400 individuals, over 150 of those in targeted in healthcare, which is a major growing sector in our community. And of the 150, approximately 50 of those are low wage workers who are currently employed with Peace Health or McKinsey Willamette Medical Center. This particular initiative, which we are particularly proud of, is really designed to help low-wage workers skill up, if you will, and to move on to higher-wage jobs. How it works is that we contribute $3,000 to a scholarship fund. The employer, in turn, contributes a scholarship and while that person is working, and the end result has been excellent. This coming June, we'll have 16 people graduating in occupations ranging from nursing to radio technologists to medical office assistants. So it's a very effective program. In my written testimony, there are three examples of individuals who have gone through that effort, and I will not read them to you, but I really would ask that you, if you would, because it really points to the success of leveraging federal resources with employer resources, and also the value of local training capacity through our community colleges. These stories and hundreds of others throughout the state that local workforce boards can share with you are only possible because we do combine federal resources with employer resources and working effectively with community colleges. But unfortunately, there's a little gray cloud on the horizon. The Federal Workforce Investment Act, which most of us uses, their funds in Oregon will be reduced by 13%. So that equates to about a $7.5 million loss of federal training funds that most of us have used to do just the kind of programs and initiatives that I've described to you. So my message to you, and I'll repeat it, is now really is the time to invest in Oregon and invest in Oregon's workforce. We'd urge you to support Skill Up. I think Peggy so aptly stated, this fund will provide more flexibility because federal funds tend to be restricted. It will allow us to expand our initiatives to a broader population than ever before, and it allows us to prepare people more effectively to really benefit from the professional technical programs that are available in our community. And with one final comment, I would also like to offer this committee the assistance of the local workforce investment boards that Peggy noted, and we are affiliated and connected with the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. We are local boards. We are business driven, and our purpose is to help employers meet skill needs now and into the future. And I just urge you to use us whenever you can. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'll note in your examples all the people that you were talking about make more money than we do, which is great. Okay, Mr. Shepherd, welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Duke Shepherd with the Oregon AFL-CIO. And I won't give you what you would expect today, I hope, which is sort of the usual labor testimony, because I bring a background that's looked at this from a variety of angles, and this is just sort of the latest stop on the way. I've worked with the semiconductor industry, the publicly funded workforce system, and local training providers to try and meet industry workforce needs. On my own time, I'm a board member at Mountain Lake Community College. In 2005, I worked for the Portland Business Alliance, doing a regional business plan modeled on the Oregon business plan. So for the better part of 10 years, from one view or another, I've been hearing about economic needs in the workforce, and it hasn't changed. The story stays the same. We've recruited and attracted and grown a whole lot of businesses, and we've left them high and dry when they need workers. Likewise, we're leaving citizens behind when they can't capitalize on these jobs that are created. It's barely an exaggeration to say that Oregon's workforce strategy has been to expand the airport, to fly people in, to fill these jobs. I can tell you, having spent 4 years directly working with the semiconductor industry specifically, we've missed major opportunities for Oregonians, and not just in engineering. We're talking about jobs that take 2 years or less. But we're just missing those. Recruitment and relocation costs a whole lot more, and every business I ever met with would much, much, much rather hire locally than recruit elsewhere. They would go where the labor is, and it hasn't been here. And that's for businesses of every size. When I did the regional business plan, I met with 13 business organizations. It were chambers. They were associations. It was small businesses. It was welding. I've been hearing welding needs for 10 years now. At some point, the state's investment needs to truly couple up with the need. We're setting up a situation where Oregon residents only compete against labor forces around the world for jobs that anybody can do. Meanwhile, the jobs that really require skills won't be filled here, and those businesses will not fill those jobs. They will go out of business, or they will leave, or they will fly people in to fill those jobs. You're going to have dual systems where if you're raised here, if you're schooled here, you're not competitive here. But if you're from somewhere else, you've been invested in, you can come in and get a fine job in Oregon. I would urge you to return to the governor's recommended budget for workforce training, particularly for SkillUp and for community colleges as a starting point, though ideally moving to $529 million.
What was that number?
$529
million. That's not
I saw it
somewhere.
And finally, I know I'm running out of time. I'd just like to say the first time I came here to the Capitol was for an Oregon Student Lobby Day. And it was as a student asking for more funding for post-secondary education. And here, all the students are behind us today. I'm here again. It would be great not to have this be a biennial sort of repeat of when's the state going to fulfill its needs at workforce training and post-secondary education. And I know you have enormous budgetary pressures well beyond this, but I hope that this session, the Oregon legislature will finally make the kind of progress that has been talked about for so long. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shepard, Ms. Miller, and Mr. Forster. I think we're going to try and not do questions, so I really appreciate it very much today. And so then now I'm going to call the next panel with You Know Who You Are, Career Pathways, Work Readiness, and Healthcare. And while they're coming up, I want to ask a question of Mr. Bender, Legislative Fiscal, just to make sure that I'm clear. The $10 million in the governor's budget for SkillUp, that is completely separate from any operations budget for community colleges, correct? That's a separate
$10 million. It's a separate line item that it would not be distributed through the community college support fund in addition to that.
Okay, thank you. Clarification. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bender, do you happen to know the total amount in annual federal workforce funding we stand to lose if we don't fund the SkillUp program?
I believe that number is zero.
Okay.
Yeah. Mike, Senator, I guess the committee obviously remembers that we did receive some testimony last week that the number that the governor had included for workforce development in federal dollars, we anticipate now it's going to be reduced. So I think by at least about $12 million, $13 million.
I forget the exact number. Today we heard about $7.5 million. I don't know if there's anyone from the department here who can clarify what the expected reduction is from the level in the governor's
$7.5 million
from what the level was in the governor's budget.
Thank you very much. You want to go first?
My name is Cynthia Risen, Director of the Mid-Willamette Education Consortium at Chemeketa Community College. Chair Galizio and members of the committee, I'm here as a member of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board and also co-chair of its Youth and Education Committee. I want to focus my testimony on another priority of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, a policy option package in the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development budget for career pathways. For the past several years, community colleges have been working with our high schools, universities, local workforce investment boards, and employers and industry associations to make transitions for students easier, to increase the number of diplomas, certificates, and degrees, and to offer more programs and high-demand occupations in each region and for each college. Last week, I attended a Pathways Academy, attended by over 200 education and workforce leaders. One of them was Tony McNair, Curriculum Assistant Principal at McMinnville High School, who is a leader both in dual credit options for high school students and career pathway development. Last year, McMinnville High School students earned over 2,500 college credits, and this year, his students have an opportunity to complete 15 different career pathways and or receive their Associate of Arts Oregon Transfer degree from Chemeketa Community College, combining dual credit opportunities and advanced placement exam completion. I want to make sure that I note that all of the 33 high schools in Chemeketa's district have the same opportunity as McMinnville students do in order to receive dual credit opportunities. Almost $9,000 in tuition costs were saved for all region's taxpayers last year. Mr. Tony McNair was successful in his work at McMinnville High School, partly because Chemeketa Community College has appointed a career pathways coordinator to help build the bridges between high schools and the college, support these students as they transition to Chemeketa, and increase the speed of career and technical programs and workforce training programs tied to demand jobs. That type of investment that Chemeketa offers is not possible at many community colleges in Oregon, especially our smaller rural colleges. Yet all students deserve the same opportunity as McMinnville High School students to be successful. This policy option package would place a career pathways coordinator in each community college to put education and workforce policies in action. The investment in career pathways leverages federal funds, particularly Carl Perkins resources and Workforce Investment Act resources, making the investment in career pathways even more powerful. The $15 million Perkins state allocation may provide the tools for career pathways, but the legislature's investment in career pathways provides the infrastructure to build long-term sustainability within the community colleges to support these services for every student. Last week, I was also happy to read in the local Statesman Journal about the shared responsibility model to help Oregon students have the financial resources to attend college. As I understand the shared responsibility model, we say to those students, we will meet you halfway. With the career pathways model, we help them see the direction and help them show the way of that career pathway. Thank you very much for your support of this critical $1 million investment for career pathways.
Thank you, Ms. Risen. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Andrew McGough. I'm the Executive Director of Work Systems, Inc., the Regional Workforce Investment Board for the City of Portland, Washington, and Multnomah Counties. I'm here on behalf of the 19 businesses employing about 40,000 people in our region and about 300,000 people worldwide that sit on our Board of Directors, the two community college presidents, the Director of the Employment Department Vocational Rehabilitation Service, as well as an array of community-based organizations and economic development organizations that sit on our regional board. Thank you very much, Representative Galizio, Chair Galizio, and the rest of the committee for this opportunity to speak to you today. I'm going to be brief. I'm joined here by my friend and colleague from up north and business owner, Roger, and he can tell you his story in a little while. But I just want to say we've invested for a number of years in both career pathways and basic skills development to the tune of several million federal dollars, again, through the Federal Workforce Investment Act. The basic skills investments, obviously, are pretty much a no-brainer because increasingly we're encountering emergent and even incumbent workers that need basic skills development to help regional companies remain competitive. This is particularly true given the changes in the economy, and we envision that as baby boomers continue to retire, you're actually losing, you know, your most educated, highly experienced personnel, and you can't replace those folks with new workers. Those are highly skilled, highly trained workers that are, you know, we're just starting to see the numbers leaving the labor force now, but I think in the next few years we're going to see increasing numbers. And just on the basic skills side, I want to give you a little bit of perspective. Of all of the labor market growth in the Portland metropolitan area in the last 2 years, 40% of that growth spoke English as a second language. So you're talking about a very, very big change in the demographic of people that are accessing services in our region. And I just want to say, we are entirely reliant on federal resources to address those issues, entirely, 100%. We recently hired an independent economics consulting firm, Echo Northwest, to do a study of regional workforce resources, and they identified about
80 different service providers, of which almost 80% of those providers providing these basic academic and English as a second language skills were entirely reliant on federal resources. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal that these federal resources are going to diminish about $7.5 million for programs that are starting July 1, but it's an even bigger deal that in today's dollar, the federal government invests about 10% of what they invested in 1970 in federal workforce investment programs. 10%. On the career pathway side, we think, from our board's perspective, and again, we've been engaged in this game for a long time, these are discretionary investments, and our board members think that it's the right thing to do. It's a smart way to deliver curriculum, it engages business, and it works for both the workers and employers. So we think it's a very forward way to think. It addresses immediate needs, but it also interjects some changes in the delivery structure itself. And I think that there's high value added for the state in looking how we can incent changes in the delivery model of the community college structure. And this is a great way to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. McGough.
Gentlemen, for the record, my name is Roger Albert. I'm the Director of Manufacturing at Triad Speakers Incorporated in Portland. We're a manufacturer of high-end sound systems. I want to talk today about communication and the fact of diversity in the workplace. I can certainly testify to it. It is a certain reality. Communication is an hourly, daily challenge in our workplace. It never goes away. The languages that we deal with are a smorgasbord. It includes Russian, Spanish, Chinese, Vietnamese, Korean, and Ukrainian. And there may be one or two others that didn't get onto the list here. Our manufacturing processes are critically dependent on instructions, both written and verbal. And so it's a challenge when a Russian speaker and a Vietnamese speaker are trying to make sense of a document that's written in English. So the use of three languages there. We are users of one of the programs, the ESL program for Workforce Connections. These people came into our facility, conducted comprehensive ESL training. They made the effort to understand our workforce, understand the language of the floor, understand the people, and the language of manufacturing before they conducted the classes, so that they would be they would understand what these people are, what we're asking these people to understand. They also took the initiative to take training in lean manufacturing, which is kind of a buzzword in industry now. It's an effort to kind of copy or take advantage of what Toyota has done with the Toyota production system in terms of productivity and quality, which again adds another language, that being Japanese. So the benefits have been that people are able to understand the processes, what we're asking them to do. When they have questions, they're able to ask questions, and we're able to come to conclusive answers as to what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. It's also provided the benefit people for personal growth, of course. Those people that have been able to communicate better have been given additional opportunities to cross-train and gain promotion, which is very important. The other aspect is
And Mr. Albert, if you can wrap up pretty soon, because we've been here for 30 minutes and we've only had about six people, and I'm getting nervous.
Okay.
So I'm not blaming you, but I'm just making an observation.
Okay. I just have one more point.
Yeah.
And that was, of the 36 people that are working out on the shop floor right now, 12 of those people came to us through Workforce Connections. And they're all very valued employees. And thank you again.
Thank you. And I fail to say this. The department has put that the next panel will be a panel of students who could not get access for lack of classes, and I hope those students know who they are.
I think that was what I wanted to say. Know who they are is what I was trying to say. It sounds like it could be a very large group of 10,000 students. But anyway, Mr. Goldberg.
Chair Galluzio, members of the committee, thank you for hearing our testimony today. For the record, I'm David Goldberg, Executive Director of the Oregon Healthcare Workforce Institute, and I've submitted written testimony that you've got, and I won't read it here. The reason that I'm here testifying is that there's been a confluence of two aspects that are having the most dramatic effect on the future of healthcare occupations, and that is what the chair's budget did to both the community college budget and the workforce budget, both the career pathways piece, the skill up program, as well as the general fund appropriation for the community colleges. We've been looking at what has happened over the last three biennia with the significant defunding of community colleges, particularly to the healthcare occupations. As a former dean of health occupations at PCC, I know that there was effort across the state to try to hold on to those programs during the lean years of the recession, and most of the community colleges were able to do that. In fact, miraculously, if we look at registered nursing in the state, during this six-year period, there was actually an increase of 76% of completers of programs in the state. And the question is why and how? And the answer is that the private industry has stepped up to support basic funding for community colleges, basic funding for some of our OUS programs, and even for some of the private university programs. But this is not sustainable. This was funding that came in anecdotally, that came in because the threats to the community college budgets and to the OUS budgets at the time were threatening the existence of many of the health professions. We know from the Department of Employment study, and even more so from studies that we've done subsequently, that between 59,000 and 80,000 workers will be needed in the next 15 years to meet the healthcare demands of our state. That is replacement workers as well as new workers in fields that we can identify. Every one of those jobs is living wage. Every one of those jobs is benefited living wage jobs. And so the chair's budget has really decimated the opportunity to invest in healthcare workforce issues through both the workforce dollars and the community college dollars. When we look at the policy option packages that went through that got put into the governor's budget, every community college had an expansion or a creation of a new healthcare occupational program that will not be able to happen if those funds are not restored. I think with that, I'll let students speak.
Thank you. Well, thank you, all four of you. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you very much. So before we bring up the student panel that I hope is coming up soon somewhere. Students? All right, after the students, they're trying to get classes right now. They can't. The next panel will be from Allied Health Fields, Nancy Bell and Jay Henry. I have up next. So, come on up.
Hello.
All right, so to enforce a little discipline, because otherwise we're going to not have as many people as we'd like, I'm going to start to, and I shouldn't start with the students, but I'm going to hold up after, this is kind of 30, right? This means you've still got 30 seconds, which is a decent amount of time, and then this means zero. You should sort of start wrapping it up as best you can. And I'm not just going to do that with students. That's going to be from here on out. So please introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Tim Lussier. I'm the president of our student government up at Clackamas Community College. It's great to be here. Course offerings and course selections is something I know a lot about. I've been at Clackamas Community College for 2 years, and I'm trying to transfer with my AAOT so I can be a junior at University of Oregon and earn a bachelor's degree in business. And I know, obviously, talking with students and representing students, there's a lot of high-demand areas that students can't get classes in. ESL is one of them. There's just a lot of students that try to get in those programs, and we just don't have enough course offerings for those. Nursing, obviously, is one that's, I think, well aware, and that's a continuing problem for many students. Anatomy and physiology, sociology, we have a lot of the core areas that students need to transfer on are in such high demand that students can't can't get those completed. So that's what I'm here to talk about. You know, I'm in an accounting class, and we have 11 students now, and that's down from, you know, 15 or 20 that started with. And so if there's ever an issue about cutting a class or combining classes, to fit that in your work schedule, it's just very hard. So, you know, when we talk about course selections, it's very important to keep those doors open for those students. So thank you.
Thank you. And it's, how do you pronounce your last name?
Lucier.
Lucier. Right. And when you started that accounting class, how many people were there?
There was like 15 or more. Uh-huh. And so I just hope that that we don't cancel that, because there's 11 of those students currently in the class with me that need to get that to transfer or, you know, to continue on. So that's just one of those areas that there's a problem with. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for being concise. I'm sorry, I don't know your name. So.
My name is Bethany Adamson. I'm also a student at Clackamas Community College. I'm the administrative assistant for Associated Student Government. And I've also have kind of a similar story as Tim. I'm running my transfer degree to go to the University of Oregon to get a bachelor's degree in business. So Clackamas has been a great stepping stone for that. Along with the courses that he mentioned, like the ESL, the nursing, other... I think that also general courses such as math, writing, those courses fill up just the same. I tried to register for an online writing class, and within the first week of registration, it was already full. I mean, economics, just a lot of courses seem to fill up. So I guess that's all.
Okay. Well, thank you for being here, Ms. Adamson. We hope you can get that degree and get to that university.
Hi, my name is Marilyn Delgado, and I attend Lane Community College. This is my fourth year at LCC, just because I work 40 hours a week. So, you know, I'm a non-traditional student, and our campus is full of non-traditional students, you know, students with parents, you know, students at work to go to college. And it's really hard, you know, when there's only so many classes a term that are offered that you need to graduate, you need to get your associate's degree. I take personally a lot of night classes. You know, I work from 9 till 6 in the evening, so I'm in class from 7 in the evening till 9 p.m. And I know a lot of students do the same thing as well. And our nighttime classes have like shrunk so much just because we don't have the funding to have more classes in the evening. I have to take telecourses, and there's just like not many telecourses that are being offered, just the famous online classes. And it's taken me 4 years, you know, just to get out of Lane. If I would have had the classes that I needed when I needed to take them, I can honestly say that I would have graduated last year already, and I would have been a junior and being an incoming senior at the University of Oregon. So I think, you know, this is something really important to our students, because, you know, once they're there for so long, you know, the motivation just kind of goes away, and we need to keep them motivated to continue with higher education.
I've still got a mind if I ask you one question?
Yes.
So would it have been economically feasible for you to work 20 hours or 25 hours and take more classes during that time, or is that just not an option?
Well, you know, having to pay, you know, for rent and everything and bills, it's hard, you know, like, we're college students. We don't get paid the $25,000 or $30,000 a year after we're going to college to have those jobs, so, you know, you have to work to go to college, and that's what you got to do right now.
So, yeah. Well, thank you for coming down today, and best of luck.
My name is Ronnie Baker. I go to Clackamas Community College in Oregon City. I'm here to say something about my classes, how they're spread out, because I'm unable to work because I have to go to school 6 days a week, and I have gaps between my classes that are like 4 and 5 hours at times. And it's I'm a father of one child, and it's really making it hard for me to spend time with my child. So that's what I have to say.
So you're unable to work because your classes that you have to take. I don't know what your degree.
I'm going to go for my bachelor's degree, but I'm taking welding and just the basics right now.
Well, you're going to have a job when you get out, so you.
Correct.
This is good, but you're saying it's a struggle because
six days a week, and you know there's some days I'm there from 8 o'clock till 4 o'clock at night. So it really makes it hard to be a family man at the same time.
Well, thank you very much for coming down today, and best of luck. Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you. Nancy Bell and Jay Henry, or are there more students? I am not clear on this.
Representative Dahlem.
I didn't. You're right in my line of sight, and I apologize. Come on up.
Thank you very much, Chairman Gleason, and members of the committee. I'm on the Economic Development Workforce and Economic Development Committee and was watching the testimony that you took. But I think I have with me a person that can speak much more eloquently and probably carry the message I want to carry with the detail and the research that I would like to have. So I'm going to introduce Bruce Hamilton with you, and if there are questions, I'll see if Bruce can answer them.
Thank you, Representative Dowling. Welcome, Mr. Hamilton.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Bruce Hamilton. I'm the Director of Generation Operations and Maintenance for PPM Energy, which is an energy developer, owner, builder, and operator, primarily in the wind energy business. We're an Oregon company, headquartered in Portland, with about 400 employees there. And we're number two in the country behind Florida Power and Light in developing the wind business, which is growing at an amazing rate. The industry has been growing about 30% per year for the last 5 years and expected to exceed 20% for the next 5 years. And it's driven by renewable portfolio standards and investment tax credit initiatives nationwide. But our business is focused in two areas, Pacific Northwest, specifically the Columbia Gorge region, as well as the Midwest, are the two areas that we have the primary concentration of our wind plants. And we're putting them up as fast as we can all over the place, and in particular these two areas. And we need literally hundreds of wind technicians for the construction and the operation of these plants nationwide. And these are fairly skilled positions. They are positions where we have pre-employment exams where we need to find the right kinds of people who are willing to do this kind of work and trained for this kind of work. And currently we're not finding that. And so I'm here to support this initiative for increased community college level training for wind technicians. The alternative is that, as we have found, is that we've had to import people from outside of the region, and that's certainly not our preference.
I might add, the Columbia Gorge Community College is the only facility west of the Mississippi that offers a training in wind energy. I believe we have a cadre of 24, and again, don't hold me to numbers, in the school right now. But we could support, and we're talking with people that are in the wind energy, we'd be able to employ 3 and 4 times that many. In our community, we've had the aluminum plant shut down. We've had a program to train those people, but we still have a need to put those kind of people to work. If you look at Sherman County, Wheeling County, and Gillum County, we have very high unemployment. Now, that's a disproportionate number of people that we have to work with, but we look at this wind energy as our saving grace. And we look at training our local population as an opportunity to keep people at home. And we look at full funding for the community colleges as the vehicle to get there. Thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you, Representative Dowling and Mr. Hamilton. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Okay, are Nancy Bell and Mr. Henry going to be here? They are here. Come on up, and then following this, I have Craig Pope and Stu Halton. Or Halton.
Well, it's kind of lonely here. I'm Nancy Bell. I'm the Director of Professional Development for Samaritan Health Services, which is a healthcare organization representing 4,300 employees in 3 counties. So that's Linn, Benton, and Lincoln County. And I want to add my words of support to the funding for the Community College Initiative. At Samaritan, we employ a lot of community college graduates. We have been very fortunate to be sheltered in some respects from the shortages of healthcare workers because we have been able to partner with our local community college. Over the last 10 years, nursing program has doubled in size at our local community college. We've added a diagnostic imaging program, and we've also added pharm tech and phlebotomy training. This really gives my industry a boost. When I look at the demographics of our employees, our average age is 47 years old. So within the next few years, we're going to be seeing a huge retirement issue, and this is not only within my organization but across the state and across the nation. So I would add my words of support to those that you've already heard to fully fund the community colleges and continue to support the mission of the community colleges, which is to offer education to Oregon, Oregon people of Oregon, particularly non-traditional students, place-bound students, and those who want to do career development while staying in their homes, being educated in their homes, and being employed within their home regions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bell. I really appreciate your coming here today, Stephanie. Thank you very much. Craig Pope and Sue, it's either Halton or Halton? Halton. And then following that, we have Tom Walsh will be up next. If he's here.
Okay. My name is Craig Pope. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and representatives of the committee for allowing this opportunity to speak today. I'm speaking to you today on behalf of metals industry folks in the state of Oregon. I represent, I have a small business. I have 10 employees, and we're in the manufacturing business for agricultural manufacturing. But I also represent a number of people here in the Mid-Willamette Valley who are also in the metals industry. And I would ask you to think about the 70% number of the kids today that come out of high schools without a solid career path or a higher education path, and what happens with those folks with a lesser funded community college program in the future when the employers like myself, who will hire anybody with virtually no skills, expecting them to be able to come on the job and at least learn some things, we'll hire those folks, but at some point in time, in order for those folks to be able to move on in their life and their career path, they've got to have some help. And honestly, the community college is the only way that that's really going to happen for them, above and beyond what I as an employer can do for them. So it's important for all of us in business to continue to send a message to you folks. It's the right thing for you to do because we need your help. We have to have this kind of program at our disposal all the time. And all of us in business, especially those that I represent in the metals industry, have become more and more aware over the last several years about how critical this is and how important it is and what we need to do to continue to come forward and give you our voice and our support to help you make these hard decisions. We appreciate, as others have said, the grinding pressure that you're under to find ways to fund all the requests, and we appreciate and understand that. We also appreciate and understand how difficult it is for the K-12 system, and it continues to get worse. But if we don't continue to fund the community college level, we have nowhere to go for finding ways to improve our workforce for the future and education level. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pope.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Sue Halton, Vice President of the Halton Company. We're your Caterpillar dealership, the bank equipment that you see on the side of the road. Halton Company has a long and close relationship with Portland Community College, and we are the only Caterpillar dealer headquartered in Oregon. Recently, Halton, with other Caterpillar dealers from the Northwest, including the states of Washington, Alaska, Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming, chose PCC as a regional training center for Caterpillar diesel training in the Northwest. And I'm just going to describe this a little bit because it shows how businesses and a community college can work together if the community colleges have a little bit of flexibility. In this program, the Caterpillar dealers will recruit qualified applicants each year for the Caterpillar Dealer Service Technician Program. It's called Think Big each year. And the first group of students started this last fall. They go for 2 years, including summers, and they combine academic and technical education with real-world experience through paid on-the-job internships in the participating dealer service facilities. They earn an Associate's of Applied Science degree. The students go for one term to school, and then they go back to their Caterpillar dealer service shops and work on the subject that they've just studied, hydraulics or electronics or whatever it happens to have been that last term. When they're working in the shop, they practice the skills they've just learned, and they're paid regular trainee wages in Oregon, about $13.80 an hour for us, at least. And they get raises each term, provided they do well both on the job and at school, because we're very concerned with how they do at school. Caterpillar's research indicates the graduates from these two-year programs perform at a level of 4 to 6 years ahead of a student who just goes to a general program because of the using your head and then actually practicing. This program is just one example of how PCC helps local and regional businesses succeed and how a close relationship with businesses enhances what a community college can offer its students. The CAT dealers involved provided $150,000 to equip the tool room for this program, and they contribute $3,000 per student to the PCC Foundation, as well as the tuition which the students pay. By hosting this program, PCC will attract hundreds of thousands of dollars to help students get a better education. Halton's long-standing partnership with PCC has resulted in a win-win-win for the company, the college, and the students. PCC gives our entire community an economic boost by helping prepare a well-informed, skilled workforce. PCC has assisted many companies in retraining our employees when industries have demanded changes in skill sets. It offers an affordable way for individuals to improve their lives by learning new skills or improving the skills they have. Excuse me. As our community evolves, we all turn to PCC for first-rate instruction and training. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Halton. Appreciate that explanation. Okay, Tom Walsh, Mr. Walsh. And following Mr. Walsh will be Chris Chandler DeTorres, I apologize if I mispronounce it, and Chuck Clements.
I'm not Mr. Walsh. I'm Don Geddes, the principal of Walsh Construction Company.
Okay, thank you.
Of which Tom is no longer a part, so.
Oh, okay. So
Tom did hire me when I started. So I'm here to lend my support to full funding for community colleges. As an employer with over 250 to 400 employees in the state of Oregon, we see an aging workforce. We also see secondary education that really does not push construction or trades related work. Especially in the metropolitan Portland area, most of our schools no longer offer shop. Middle schools no longer offer shop. So we are finding it much more difficult to recruit and find employees coming up into the trades who have the skills that we need. The community colleges more than offer support in this, as well as helping develop, as you've heard from previous speakers here, English as a second language, which is becoming a bigger part of our workforce. As I sat around my own table a couple weeks ago with family and friends, I looked around the table and half of the people in the room who had post-secondary education have come to this country in the last 10 years and have all attended PCC to improve their abilities. Very skilled people, very capable of doing the work we had, but needed the education in English and did proceed to get that. As I look to the future of where we're going as an employer, if we do not have community colleges to lend the continuing support and the changing world that we live in. We live in a world that changes daily. If I look back 25 years ago when I started with Welsh Construction as a laborer on a job site, we did not have fax machines. We did not have computers. So that's a continuing learning experience that is needed to continue to train our employees. I had to learn how to use a computer. What did I learn? PCC. I mean, that's a continuing deal, and it's a multiple task that we see that we're going to have to address. And as our workforce ages, we're very nervous about where that's going to come from. And because of that, I fully support the total funding for this program. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I apologize for
my problem.
Chris Chandler, D2S, and Chuck Clements. And then following that, we're going to get to the list, and we're going to start with folks who have come from more than 100 miles.
This is what hers is. You just made an
Please. Good afternoon, Chair Galizio and members of the committee. I'm Chris Chandler de Torres. I'm an economic developer, and I serve on the Oregon Coast Community College Board because the college is a significant part of our county's economic development plan. It's that important. We know what great things can happen for our economy when folks are trained for skilled jobs with good wages. Businesses very much need your help and support in securing the $529 million needed in order to train Oregonians for the jobs, not just of tomorrow, but for the job demands of today. Recently, Oregon Coast Community College was able to add a nursing degree program. We know from our market assessment that every one of the program's graduates will have jobs locally, paying more than $40,000 waiting for them in the private sector, not just for the next 5 years, but for the next 10, since the average age of nurses on the Central Coast is more than 50 years old. They're getting ready to retire. Nursing is a very expensive program. The community college it's so expensive the community college can't offer it without outside help. Significant fees and tuition do not cover all of the costs. If community colleges are not funded at the $529 million request, nursing at OCCC may only be offered on a two-year basis, turning graduates out every 2 years rather than every year, even though the demand for graduates is very high. As we all know, state government is run primarily from income taxes. There is no better way to increase state income tax revenues than to train Oregonians for better-paying jobs, jobs that may go unfilled for lack of workforce. When income tax revenue is high, you can fund all of the programs that we can all agree are terribly important: more state police, mental health care for the needy, K-12 education, and so much more. On a state level, the community colleges had a list of programs for which there is demand, and I've brought copies for you. Employers wanting trained employees, the community colleges statewide will not be able to offer if they are not funded at the $529 million level. Emergency management, biodiesel manufacturing, and turf management for golf courses, which pays $40,000 a year. Auto collision repair and veterinary technicians, all are programs that are needed and requested. Over 4,000 students hope to take the courses outlined in this handout, only with the level of funding needed to offer those programs. Please help community colleges help you by supporting them at the $529 million level for job and career training and $108 million for building space to house that training. These are investments that will yield dividends in the short and long term for future Oregon state budgets, Oregon businesses, and for Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, Chair Galizio and members of the subcommittee. I'm Chuck Clemens. I'm a board member at Clackamas Community College, and I'm very pleased to be with you today. I'm also very happy that you had students, some of our students, appear first, because they have put faces to the very dilemma that I wanted to talk to you about this afternoon. We board members take very, very seriously our responsibilities to balance our limited resources, the possibility of raising tuition, and the course offerings that our students deserve. We have, in addition to the students you saw today, we have approximately 27,000 students who take advantage of our programs at Clackamas. We have to balance very carefully the needs of those students as we make decisions about how to allocate our scarce resources. For example, at our last meeting a week ago, we voted as a board to raise our tuition $1 for next year. We realize that when we do that, we're making it just that much more difficult for our students to attend. But we made that decision consciously after consulting with our student government and after talking around the campus, simply because we realized if we didn't make that increase, we wouldn't be able to continue to offer the programs that make our college accessible. We did at the same time, however, make a pledge, and it's in our minutes, that if the appropriation for operations comes in higher than the governor's request, that we will reevaluate that $1 increase. And we might even be able to go back and say, hey, there's a mistake in our catalog. You heard about small classes. Community colleges require varying class sizes, so we plead guilty to sometimes having 15 students or even fewer in a class. Why? Well, many of our classes are mandated to be low for health, safety, security reasons. We have a problem with facilities, space, equipment. I walked the campus just the other day, purposely went around and counted seats in classrooms. Some of our classrooms, and they were constructed back in the 60s, when this was the norm for education, K through university level, many of our classrooms are constructed in such a fashion, sizes that can only accommodate 16 to 18 students, and even then they're kind of pushing our luck with the fire marshal. Our last building program, however, we tried to create larger spaces and more flexibility, but still we're hampered by the facilities that we must continue to have. So, as a board member, I see we have that dual role of balancing responsibilities to the taxpayer against our responsibility to citizens. Our district voters expect us to provide both academic and career education. They ask us to provide responsive workforce education. We are a haven for those who have been left behind by traditional education system, and that we are often the first, second, and maybe even the third chance for people to get a higher education. So I urge the adoption of our operations budget at the $529 million level. We'll be able to continue and perhaps even slightly improve the offerings that we provide for our students. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Clements. Detroit's. Appreciate it. So now I'm going to call up the panel of Mark Schwebke, Christina Alexander, Tim Daly, and other AFT folks. You know who you are. Come on up. And then we're going to follow that with... Okay. And then just after this, we'll have Miguel Martinez and what is it?
Stanglin.
Thank you very much. And Pinalo Carlson. Mr. Schwebke.
Hi. Good to see you. Thank you, Chair Galizio and members of the committee. My name is Mark Schwebke. I'm president of AFT Oregon. I'm a classified employee at Portland Community College. AFT represents locals at community colleges in Portland, Lane, Southwestern, Oregon Coast, and Columbia Gorge. AFT also supports the full $529 million that's been suggested as the community college funding. We also support higher funding for the OUS system as well. We're also pleased that K-12 is getting funding. It gets to my point. Higher education in Oregon is a system. It's K-20. It's an enterprise. Think of it as a business. You don't starve one part of your business that's a successful part of your business and then expect the rest of it to succeed. It's not going to work. Investing in higher education, investing in community college are good things. Investing in workforce development is critical. I sometimes wonder when I see there's full funding for educational development in the budget, and yet when we go to train those folks later on, there's a disinvestment. I don't understand how you expect economic development to work in this state if you're not going to train people who are supposed to fill those positions that you're supposedly going to bring into the state. And with that, I would like to introduce, it's my pleasure to introduce some of the members here at the panel, Tim Daly, Christina Alexander,
and Julie Kremers, and I'll let them introduce themselves from which colleges they're from. I'd also like to recognize that a couple of my fellow members from PCC, Michael Dembro and Frank Gillard from PCC. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schwartke. Mr. Daly.
Hi, thank you for having us. My name is Tim Daly. I am the Vice President of Local 3190, the Faculty Union at Southwestern Oregon Community College in beautiful Coos Bay. And we drove over today. We're all from Coos Bay, so I'll drive over today to address the committee jointly. I became part of the community college 7 years ago, and over the past 7 years, I've seen a continual defunding of community colleges and the erosion away of services and facilities at the Southwestern campus. My job at the community college, I have several jobs. One is that I'm a director of a federally funded grant called Student Support Services, which looks at first-generation and low-income college students. I also am the director of disability services that look at students with disabilities. These students are very vulnerable and have the tendency of being very underrepresented in our educational system. They struggle. They've got issues that, as you heard today, of classes not being offered or limited classes. We have our libraries aren't open on the weekends anymore. Our supplemental instruction for sciences, these biologies, chemistries, anatomy, and physiologies, we have no longer have any supplemental instruction because we can't afford to pay people that have the caliber that requires that kind of instruction. We can't afford to pay them. Our facilities, as was stated earlier, are literally falling down around our ears. We have students that have a variety of needs. I mostly work with students that are non-traditional college students. On the coast, we've had, over the past 5 or 6 years, we've had a decrease in timber. We've had a decrease in ground fishing, and last year we had a total eradication of salmon fishing. Because of this, we've had people that are coming to retrain at our college that have a variety of skills and need to improve their skills to become, once again, members of the workforce. Coos County, Curry County, and Western Douglas County, we have a high rate of poverty, and Southwestern is one of those facilities that we can assist to help bring people out of poverty and help them get in. We need child care. We need tons of stuff that will help these students become taxpaying roles, members of the community. So I really would urge you to fully fund the governor's $529 million budget and put us back on the map. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Bailey.
Good afternoon, distinguished members of the committee. It is an honor to be here today. My name is Julie Kremers, and you are my first public speaking engagement, so I'm a little nervous here. I have worked at Southwestern Oregon Community College for 5 years. I currently work as the payroll technician in the Human Resources Department, and I have been fortunate to have access to the services provided by our local community college. I am currently enrolled in classes to further my education, allowing me to increase my ability to make a difference in our community. The education that I am receiving has afforded me the opportunity to achieve economic prosperity and given me skills for continued lifelong learning. I also am the local 3972 treasurer for our classified union. Over the next 10 years, according to Julie Strawn at the Center for Law and Policy, the demands for workers will not be met by the upcoming K-12 graduates. This will create the necessity to train the current workforce to meet the job demands of the upcoming years. The co-chair's budget for post-secondary education, and particularly for community colleges, is unacceptable and falls critically short of addressing the needs of Oregonians, both today and in the future. Between 1990 and 2007, Oregon's community colleges have experienced a massive shift in revenue sources. In 1990, we could count on 50% of our revenue coming from local sources, about 30% from the state, and 20% from tuition. Today, due to many factors that have shifted to the state and students picking up more of the tab, this has meant more instability and resulted in increased tuition and program cuts. The governor's recommended budget is a good way to stabilize our college budgets while not asking more of students through tuition. Even with the governor's budget of $489 billion, though community colleges would still have to cut programs, A budget of $529 million would allow colleges the funding needed to meet enrollment and continue servicing communities at necessary levels. For too long, community colleges have been cutting budgets, eliminating programs, laying off employees, which I've had to be a part of and it's not fun, and raising tuition. Without the $529 million funding level from the state, this will continue while the demand for skilled workers, workers trained by the state's community colleges, will continue to expand astronomically. This year, the state's revenues at record highs and support from businesses across the state, we have a chance to invest in community colleges because of the vital roles they play in the future of Oregon economy. The decades-long recession on the South Coast has forced schools and colleges to cut from our budgets the equipment and programs necessary for the workforce training that will be necessary for recovery. Because of this, building and programs need updating. Without adequate funding level, Southwestern will not be able to train the workers necessary to rebuild the South Coast economy in response to the new demands and potential growth that is in store for the region and the state. It is time to start rebuilding and reinvesting in community colleges to create an educated, skilled workforce for the future of Oregon. Thank you for giving me the time to address this committee.
Thank you, Ms. Grimes. I would just say, for the next public speaking, you have great vocal variety. Just look up once in a while. So I do the, they did a great job. Did a great job. Thank you very much. So all, I want to let you know that the House has a session, an afternoon session at 4:30. But what we're, what the chair wants to do with the urging of Representative Jensen is we will just continue on, and if we need to go in and vote, we will. So if that happens, then we'll take a recess. But that's kind of the chair's plan. So, but still, we got to, if we can be as concise as possible. And with that, Christina, and I can't remember your last name.
Alexander.
Alexander?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity of being here, and I appreciate it very much, all of you on the committee. My name is Christina Alexander. I'm faculty in the Department of Social Sciences at Southwestern Oregon Community College in Coos Bay. I want to bring you a voice from the classroom. I know you heard the student's voice from the classroom, and I kind of want to share my world with you, at least my world at work. And what my experience is teaching. I should also tell you that I started school after 28 years gap in education at Southwestern Oregon Community College, and two of the programs that enabled me to, that enabled me to go to school and survive in school, the Displaced Homemakers Program no longer exists, and at that time there was also a Dislocated Workers Program, and hearing Tim talk reminded me of that, that I could not have gotten through school without the help of the Displaced Homemakers Program. The other program that no longer exists is a Supplemental Instructors Program, as you just heard, and that's how I decided and learned that I wanted to teach college, was by being a supplemental instructor in the social sciences. So I hadn't been wanting to speak about that, but hearing Tim talk reminded me of those two programs that are a great loss. I have huge classes. I'm one of those sociology instructors that one of the students was talking about, that he can't get into sociology classes. So I have enormous classes because I can't say no, and the students desperately need them. It's very difficult when they're on a timeline to graduate, and they got to have SOCH 206 because they're a nursing student, and they'd have to wait a full another year and delay graduation. So you kind of have to go there with your students. And I think that that's the other thing I want to say, is that community colleges are very, very, very different than four-year schools. The population we teach is completely different. This academic year, 80%, almost 80% of our students are first-generation college students. That's incredible. It's incredibly wonderful that they're in school. It's an incredible challenge for them and for us. Over 40% of our population do not read beyond about 10th grade level or comprehend. So the opportunities that we provide for people to, we've heard a lot about programs and work skills, and it's extremely important for people to be able to earn a living. It's also important for them to be able to think critically if we're going to have a civil society, and to read and comprehend what they're reading and know how
how to find sources of news and information. So those are, it's so multifaceted what we do in community colleges that I only can ask you for your support for what we do. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank all four of you. Appreciate it. It's very informative panel. And thanks for hosting the full Ways and Means in Coos Bay.
Yes.
It was wonderful.
Yes. Yeah, over 100 miles, and now we go.
Yes. Turn the favor. Miguel Martinez. Anne Stangland. Stangland.
Not Stangland. Stangland.
Oh, it's a good movie. And then Penelo Carson, and then Carlson, and then following that, I have Bob Russell and Ron, looks like Spisa. That's fine.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Miguel Martinez. I'm from Mexico. I moved to the U.S. 10 years ago looking for a better future and to have an education. Today I'm a student at the Oregon Coast Community College in Newport. I'm here today to tell you how my community college in Newport has helped me to have success in my life. Classes and programs such ESL, adult basic skills have taught me to learn English, my third language, besides Spanish and Nahuatl. After I started taking my credit classes in my community college in Newport, I found a skill that I enjoy, which is to make art. Because my English skills, now I'm a member of the student government and I'm helping other students to be involved in our school and help our school with its needs, because our school is very small and the classes are very limited. Community college classes now only makes me feel confident about myself. It also helped me to get a better job from dishwasher to assistant manager from a restaurant. Today I have 15 credits to finish to get my associate degree, and I'm pursuing an art degree and education degree. I want to thank my community college teachers and all of you for supporting me and believing on me. So I'm here to urge you to keep supporting our community colleges, because students like me, we want to continue with our education. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Martinez.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm here as the other lady who testified as a teacher. I was Miguel's teacher in what he calls basic skills. Actually, they're called developmental English. I don't like that name because it sounds like we're somehow people are retarded. It really is college prep. And what I want to say about...
Anne, can you remind us how to pronounce your last name?
Stangland. Anne Stangland.
Perfect.
Stangland. It's Norwegian. It's my husband's name. At any rate, I think what I want to say, and say it succinctly, is we have a motto at our college, and it's called, it's never too late, and that's, it's never too late to get an education. And it's supposed to be directed really to our GED students, and I taught ABGD for about 20 years and then moved into the developmental range, which only means the students get college credit. However, it's a lot of those classes aren't transferable credit. But my point is this. Many of our students, because we have such a diverse population in gender and ethnicity and every other way, we have folks that are retraining, and when they come into the college prep classes, they really need that preparation in order to be successful in their college level classes, transferable classes. And I cannot tell you how much these people need that support. Some of these folks have not been in the classroom for 15 or 20 years, sometimes 25. Some of our high school students, because they're dealing with classes of 45, come out of those classes from high school, they're not prepared for college work. So I just cannot urge you enough to continue to fund and fund at a decent level. We have also a nursing program at Oregon Coast, which has newly been instituted, as well as an aquarium program, which I think is one of a kind in the nation. And I have funneled people from the classes I teach into those technical programs. And, of course, those are family-wage jobs. But I started out teaching at a junior high, and a counselor there told me that, he said, the kids you work with will not make it without your help. That is exactly true of the adults I work with. Without assistance, in which the community college is one of the few that offers, universities no longer do any remediation, those students will not make it. So they absolutely need this help if they're going to have a career and fulfill their educational goals. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Hi, my name is Paolo Carlson, and I'm a student at Columbia Gorge Community in the Dalles, and I'm a little out of my comfort zone, so, but when they asked me to come today to talk to you, I felt it was really important, because being a student at that college has completely been a life-changing thing for me. I grew up in a home where there were no resources and education was not one of our priorities. And whenever I would bring it up, I was reminded that I was a girl, which made me not very smart and not deserving of a college education, that should be for boys. So I just always dreamed of going to college and at times wished I was a boy so I could go. And I spent 20 years as a homemaker raising children when I found myself divorced with no skills and no way to take care of myself. I worked two minimum wage jobs for years until I met my new husband, who decided it was time for me to get the college education I always wanted. And at the age of 48, after 33 years of not being in high school, I enrolled as a student. And I have absolutely loved every single second of it. The classrooms were small enough that I was very comfortable right away, and the teachers gave me individualized attention. And I now have 96 credits after 3.5 years. I'll graduate in June. At the age of 52 with an LPN certificate, I plan on getting my license. I plan on going back in September and doing my RN certificate as well as getting an associate's degree. And there are no words to express how much it means to have self-esteem and an education and feel like an educated person and be able to understand the world around you better. And I really am grateful that in our small town we've had a community college, especially as good as the one that I go to. Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming out of your comfort zone. Congratulations. That was very, very important testimony, and I appreciate all three of you taking the time. Thank you very much. Bob Russell and Ron Spitzel, I hope I'm not mispronouncing that.
Well, it looks like we got a tag team here. Please proceed.
I'm Ron Spiso. I'm with Oregon Coast Community College, and President Patrick O'Connor wasn't able to be here today, and he asked me to speak instead. I am going to introduce you to several individuals in our nursing program and have them speak on behalf of our nursing program. Kate?
My name is Kate Miller. I am a student admitted into the nursing program. This is the first year of our nursing program. We'd like to continue it. We have waited a long time for this. It took me 8 years to get the prerequisites because of the staggering of the classes and the location of classes and having to work. And I think it's important that you know that it's 80 miles to another college, and so for those of us who are working and living in that area, it's difficult to get certain classes, and they're staggered throughout the county. So this program is an incredible gift to us, and we'd like the college to continue to be funded. The college is also planning on building a campus, which will really enhance not only our program, but the college itself, and allow our young people a place, a central location for classes, and obviously we need the funding to do that. We thank you for your time.
Thank you.
My name is Carla Schaefer. I'm also a nursing student at the Oregon Coast Community College. I'm a re-entry student after 20 years. I'm a mother of three. Like many of us, I make too much money for assistance and not enough to support my family. So I got into the nursing program to make a better life for my family. Also to show my children that no matter how long you've been out of school, you can go back and learn and accomplish anything. The importance of our program is that, like Kate said, we are 80 miles away from any other college. I work full-time. I work at a hospital where most of our nurses are 50 and older and are experiencing burnout, and we really need the program to be able to support our community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kayla Tokar. I'm a re-entry student at Oregon Coast Community College. I've entered the first year of the nursing program there. I'm a mother of four. I work full-time at a nursing home. This program has been very important to me. What it will mean for my family is that they will be able to live a life without hand to mouth, and that they will see the importance of education. I believe that higher education is a commitment to our community. Our community makes a commitment to us, and I think our community deserves a commitment from the government in the funding that you give us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good way. Make room for the other two ladies. Are they not here to speak to us? Oh, mercy. Who we got? Hey, Bob Russell.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Russell. I'm president of the Oregon Trucking Associations, and I'm here in support of our community colleges. Some of you may be aware that currently we have a shortage nationwide of about 25,000 truck drivers. In the next few years, that is estimated to grow to well over 100,000. Some may ask why that's important. In Oregon today, the trucking industry transports 72% of the total tons of freight. In the next 20 years, that's projected to grow to about 76%. So where Oregon's economy goes, or where the trucking industry goes, is where Oregon's economy goes, as does the nation. So we're one of those foundational industries that supports the entire economy. Without truck drivers, we can't provide that service for our economy. We have currently today at Rogue Community College in Chenecuta, we have truck driver training programs. And at Clackamas Community College, we have a very innovative program that we think is going to be a model for the rest of the country. We've started a career ladder system, working in concert with the public schools, with the employment department, with the community college, with the private sector truck driving school, that we believe is going to allow us to produce the necessary drivers for the future, and we believe that it will be not only adopted in other parts of the state, but all over the country. We've been able to attract an $850,000 grant from the U.S. Department of Labor to help us develop the curriculum, so we're getting money from other places. We've gotten a little bit of money from the state of Oregon so far. We're really excited about this program. We just had a big meeting last Friday, and the members of my industry are really excited. So our community colleges are providing some very vital services to Oregon businesses and will help maintain Oregon's economy. And we are very much in support of Oregon's community colleges. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Russell. Appreciate your testimony. Thank you. Oh, you're not saying that. Okay, so I have DJ Oswald.
some of you need to take a penmanship class. DJ Oswald.
Hey, I didn't write that.
No, yours is fine. M.D. Von, can't even read it. Valkenberg? Is that close? Barbara A. Can you read that? What is it? Abshire, thank you. And Terry B. You're up? You're all doctors, right? Because I can't read that.
God wish.
Sir Oswald.
Hi, my name is DJ Oswald. I am a student in the wind energy program at Columbia Gorge Community College. I want to first apologize for my attire when I woke up in the bells this morning. I thought I was just going to drive 10 miles to school, and that was it. But let me just tell you a little bit of story. I grew up in the local area of the Dells, and just like many people my age, when I graduated from high school, I left the state because if you're not a good windsurfer, there's nothing to do out there. Moved to Florida, never really found a career. But I came back last Thanksgiving to see my folks up here in Portland, and in the newspaper, Columbia Gorge Community College, there was an ad for the wind energy program, and that just sounded like something I wanted to do, wind energy. I moved back from Florida across the country just for this program, and on further research, I found there's only one other program. Well, there's two others. There's one in Canada, Fugold, and there's also one in Iowa, and I've seen Wizard of Oz, and they got tornadoes and houses and all that stuff, and I don't want anything to do with that. So I came back here to go to school for this program. And I got to tell you, the coolest thing about this program is that, just like Bruce Hamilton testified from PPM earlier, they need 100 people each year. And our school is only able to fork out about 24 a year right now. I'm one of those 24 students, and I'm a qualified individual. I've never been qualified for anything in my life. And I am now a qualified technician. And I can say with all honesty that when I graduate, and that's in June, I have a job waiting for me, 100% sure. And I can probably even ask them, I can probably tell them how much I want to make, actually, because I'm in that demand, and that is going to be in demand. But so I just want to urge you guys to please, please, please consider a recommendation for $529 million, because, I mean, if you say no to that, you're going to say no to wind energy, you're going to say no to local people taking local jobs, and you know, just having a better future for everybody. So thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Oswald. And if you don't do well in the wind energy, but I'm sure where you can do radio or television. There's no doubt in my mind. We'll give you a certificate. You're qualified. So I think it was M.D. Von...
That's me. Thank you. I'm M.D. Van Valkenberg. M.D. is a little bit misleading, although I'm a doctor of jurisprudence. Anyway, I'm a member of the board at the Columbia Gorge Community College, and I recently attended a convention in Washington, D.C., of community college people from all over the country. And all those people had something in common. They had a very similar condition. Almost every community in the country is on the verge of economic expansion. And certainly true of the Dalles, Hood River, Mid-Columbia area. There are approximately 110 high-tech companies in the Mid-Columbia area. These companies are designing, manufacturing, and training people to use their products, such as robot planes that you see on the border in Afghanistan and Iraq, including the sensing devices on those planes, as well as the wind energy program that we've got going, Google, and other technological advances. But there's a hitch in all of this. There's a severe lack of trained people to service this expansion. The solution is to create, maintain, and expand the education of a workforce to drive this economic technological phenomena into reality. I don't know how many of you have read The World is Flat, but I recommend it to you. It has a lot of information in there that explains what we in particular are experiencing in this regard. What this does for Oregon, if we can get this extra funding, It vitalizes our economy, as did the GI Bill after World War II. It gives our state a competitive edge. It will provide this legislative body with new sources of dollars to pay for these projects and provide an economic sound future for our children for years to come. So I urge you to take the risk, provide the resources that you have the power to do for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Von Valkenburg, and I'm sure Thomas Friedman will appreciate the plug for his book. I think they have. I think he has a new edition too. So he should send me one just for saying that. Barbara.
Hi.
Hi.
Good afternoon, Chairman Gleesville and members of the committee. I am Barbara Abshire. I am a business owner. I have Fishtails Cafe in South Beach, Oregon, and we are in our 8th year of operation. 15 years ago, I was a 50-year-old waitress without too many prospects of going much further than Oregon Coast Community College happened to me and literally changed my life. One afternoon, I decided to register for some courses at OCC, my community college, and got hooked. I just kept coming back for more. The courses were affordable then and were within reach of my limited budget. 3 years later, after much hard work, I received an associate's degree in both the arts and the sciences. Due to this effort and my newfound confidence in my ability to succeed, I procured a management job in a local restaurant and a few years later bought my own restaurant. Since then, I have created approximately 10 full-time jobs, giving back to my community what it has given to me. Realizing that I needed some extra business training, I went back to my community college and became a participant in the Small Business Development Center there, where I learned ways of running my business in a sound and profitable manner. I was in this program for 2 years, and I'm very thankful for the tutelage that I've received from talented teachers and professionals involved with the SBDC program. Today, I'm a member of our active SBDC alumna group. I still take advantage of classes at my community college. I'm currently learning to speak French in one of the non-credit classes offered there. From time to time, I take writing classes. And I also have opportunities to brush up on my computer skills and bookkeeping skills. Now my granddaughter, a young, gifted woman of 17, is getting a jump start on her college education by taking advantage of the expanded options program offered by our community college. In this program, she will be able to finish the first 2 years of her college education while still in high school, thereby reducing the financial burden of her education on her family and herself. In closing, I want to say that I cannot stress enough the importance of the community college to the community. It changed my life, and I am sure that there are a lot of other stories out there just like mine, stories about change and success, stories about life-altering time spent at our community colleges, the colleges that work for you and for me. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Terry Armentrout, and I am a retired federal employee and also the owner of Terry B. Armentrout Business and Engineering Solutions. I consult in Black Belt Lean Six Sigma. That's the technology that we taught to Japan, and they're using it to get their pants off now. I want to make 2 points to you. The first is that highly skilled technicians and craftspeople are important to make our economy go. And the second point being that the community colleges are the institutions that provide that training and that resource. First, then, give you an analogy of Michelangelo with all of his intelligence and innovation and progressive thinking, was not able to bring that to bear simply because the populace did not have the understanding to fully appreciate the genius that he was bringing forward. That same situation occurs today. We have the Michelangelos, but now we need the technicians and the people who are capable of taking really complex ideas and turning them into productive and effective techniques. What we used to do with stick welding is no longer sufficient, that now we use robots and computer-controlled numerical machines to accomplish effectiveness and productivity that's not possible with the hand methods. That's what I'm talking about in terms of having the quality at that level. Secondly, the community colleges are the place that brings this kind of technology into a wide populace for an effective workforce. I have personal knowledge of the engineering technician program for the hydropower industry and also the wind energy program at Columbia Gorge Community College. Although these may be old product processes for producing energy, they are indeed high tech. Without those highly skilled technicians, we will not be able to take advantage of those resources or compete in the world economy. So my points are, A, that we need highly skilled technicians and craftspeople, and secondly, community colleges are the ones that train these people and put them into our workforce. So thank you for your time.
Thank you both for the testimony. So just kind of a little big picture here on this. We have good news and, well, we have good news, all good news. There's a lot of people here. So it looks like there are about six more people who've signed up who have come from more than 100 miles, and I want to make certain that they have an opportunity to testify today. There are about 21 people that have signed up who are from less than 100 miles. So what I would like to do is allow the people who've come from more than 100 miles to testify. I think we need to probably stop at 5 o'clock. And then tomorrow we had scheduled, there was no testimony scheduled for tomorrow, but I think what we need to do is continue having public testimony tomorrow so that those of you who came from less than 100 miles theoretically have the opportunity, understanding that some of you maybe you can't because you specifically took time out of your day to come here today. And I'm sorry about that. It's just it's very difficult. So, but we can all, again, we always accept written testimony. That's also an option. But I think for today, that's just going to be the most realistic way to go. So, I'm going to call up the people in two groups. Those have come from more than 100 miles, and then maybe get a couple, if there are a couple people, I don't know if we're going to have time, less than, but then we're just going to continue tomorrow. Let me just ask, if you're in the room and you've come from less than 100 miles, if we had tomorrow as another day of public testimony, how many of you could make it and would be interested in doing it? Okay. It would be, you're right, it would be 3 o'clock. Not that many. What do we do? Well, let me call up the folks who are from more than 100 miles, and let's see. So we've got Kelly Tokar, Carla Schaefer.
We did them.
What is that?
A.T.
Ronan, Catherine Miller, Patty Kuhn, and Candace Douglas. So we finished that. And then on deck, Wayne Esty, and Darla Hicks, and Michael Muzan.
Hi. I'm A.T. Roman, Oregon Coast Community College, and I'll make this really quick because you do have my written testimony. And I thank you very much because we did break in with our nursing students who could not come back tomorrow. I represent the college in the business development sector, raising money, and I can tell you that our community really supports our college, not just through the bond measure that was passed in 2004, but onward. This whole county of Lincoln County wants a community college. We have a college, but we tend not have a campus, so we will be having a campus. And I'd like you to know that scholarships are becoming more and more important because of the high cost of tuition. We cannot raise tuition. We cannot continue to do that. We just can't. You've heard from students. You know how financially tough it is. We have so many students that are working and working more than one job. I want to read you just a few statements from students to give you an idea. Beth said, "This scholarship will help me pursue my degree because in addition to going to college, I am raising three kids and have to pay for child care when I'm attending class." Susan said, "This scholarship is just the beginning of turning my dreams into reality. I feel like I am top of the world because I now have the ability to make something of my future." Cheryl said, "I want you to understand that this is not just money you are giving to a poor student, but an investment into a life that wants to change others." Brian said, "I'm a man in my mid-40s trying to improve myself with education as part of my midlife career transition. This scholarship will help me to continue my education." Hakan said, "This scholarship will certainly make my life easier, especially with the recent increase in tuition and the overly expensive textbooks. Now I don't have to spend all of the money it took me an entire summer to make to attend college." Community colleges care about the communities they serve. I think you all know that. They care about the students they help and about the future they are creating. Please show that you care by funding this $522 million that's so needed so that we can continue to grow our communities, our students, and the future of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Michael Poyar, and I came up here from Central Oregon Community College. Now you're looking at the list and wondering what's going on. I'm not on there, but we came from more than 100 miles, so I just thought I'd make it brief. My name is not important, but I represent the average person in their 20s. I'm a student. Sometimes I'm part-time. Sometimes I'm full-time. I have a part-time job, maybe a full-time job. I live on my own. I'm struggling. I'm trying to pay for bills. I'm facing a crisis that the generations in this room might not have faced. I'm looking at houses that I can't afford, and your generation's going to be ready to sell them to me. They're going to be out of my price range. I'm losing jobs to low-cost labor, illegal labor, and people that have a bachelor's degree. So I decided to go to school. So I'm at school now. I'm struggling. I'm paying bills for my apartment. I'm paying high tuition costs. But the programs are getting cut down. My class sizes are huge, and I don't have the faculty that I need to help me. I have a dream. A dream to become a nurse, a dream to become a dental assistant, a dream to get my bachelor's and my master's so that one day I can have a good job and provide for my family. But my dream is getting squandered. My dream, my whole, is getting more and more distant. I can no longer imagine myself at the University of Oregon, at Oregon State, because of these programs, because of these cuts, because I can't turn to faculty members, because their jobs have been cut. And in turn, I see a crisis for my generation. I see a crisis for a generation that's lost, that's trying to go to school. And some of us are lucky enough to have parents that have a few bucks that can help us out. But the rest of us are being suffocated. We're being blanketed by credit cards. We're drowning in our own society. We're more interested in Time and in People magazine than we are in today's society. So for those of us that are motivated, for those of us that are trying, I beg you, I plead with the people up there who look completely bored out of their minds. Please, please, I need this. I need this $529 million. Do not create a problem for the future of America. Help my generation become educated and follow our dreams. And follow our dreams. We need this $529 million, and I thank you for your time today.
And I thank you, and way to be aggressive. We're not bored. We just don't look as attractive as all of you at any... I don't know what to tell you. Apparently I missed the panel, so I apologize, all the way from Rogue and Lane. So I have... and I don't have the names. I know it's the OEA panel, so I don't have your names. Maybe that's why I missed it. So...
Come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgence. For your record, Lori Wimmer Whalen, representing the Oregon Education Association, its 46,000 members in K-12 and community colleges alike. And we are here to remind you that $71 million separates the community college request and the co-chair's recommended level. And we believe that there are three good reasons that you should consider the higher level rather than the lower level and see it as a loan, not an expenditure. First of all, as you will see from my testimony, I've attached a report by Dr. Richard Sims, who's an economist, who did a little study for us showing that the return on investment, the immediate economic stimulus of your commitment to this budget line item, returns $5.18 for every dollar you invest, and it does so in the first 3 years of that investment. Secondarily, obviously, there's a long-term economic impact, as you've heard so eloquently from all the folks who've come before me today. And finally, there's the human investment, which also, I think, no longer needs the imagination to dream of, because so many people have told you about what they either anticipate or have already appreciated from their community college education. So with that, you've got my written testimony. I'll let you read it on your own time. I won't take up any more of yours, but I would like to introduce to you three members of the Oregon Education Association who are faculty at Oregon's community colleges. First is Julian Lungfold, who's a program coordinator for the nursing program at Lane Community College, and she'll be followed by Wendy Simmons, who's in the health and wellness at Lane Community College, and finally Paul Fisher from Rogue Community College. Thanks.
Chairman Galizio and committees, my name is Julia Monkfold. I'm a 30-year resident of Lane County in Oregon. 25 years I've worked at Lane Community College as a nursing faculty and 2 years as a coordinator.
I have to interrupt you. We have to go do a quick vote.
Bye.
We're just going to call a recess and then come back.
Okay.
I'm just going to recess the committee. We're going to push the button, and we're going to come back. Okay, I apologize. So
okay.
We're recessing. They didn't even need our vote. This was the other thing. But anyway, okay, you were so rudely interrupted, so please continue.
Shall I continue?
Maybe state your name again.
Okay. My name is Julia Monkfold, and I am the program coordinator of the nursing program at Lane Community College. I've been a faculty there for 27 years. Last month, I testified in support of OHSU and the statewide nursing curriculum that is a part of that and which we are part of. And I'm here today to ask you to please fully fund the community colleges. If you pull the plug out of the bottom part of the statewide curriculum, it will not work. The other thing I will add, since it's the late of the day, is just one number for you, and that number is 40. And that is the number of nursing students that are in every seminar that we run at Lane Community College. We may get money from industry for clinical instructors, but we get no money at all for, not even a dime for a paperclip while they're in the classroom. And so the seminars that I have run this year at 35 will next year go to 40. And that's my last word to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Wendy Simmons, and I'm speaking to you as both an employee and a student. I've taken classes at Lane Community College since the early 90s, and I've worked at Lane Community College for the past 9 years in various positions. And I want to reiterate that we need at least $529 million for the community college, if not $561 million, is actually would help us to avoid further cuts that we'll be making this year, even with the $529 million. I just want to make three brief points, and one is I want you to take a moment to think about if you've ever benefited from a community college. For example, have you ever had your teeth cleaned? Have you ever taken your car to a mechanic? Has a nurse ever taken your blood pressure? And these are just a few examples, and I'm sure you realize the several technical programs we have, but I just wanted to point those out that most likely we've all benefited from a community college. I also want you to consider some of the direct impacts that the cuts are having on students, besides the ones mentioned today, such as having trouble getting into classes. Once they do find the classes, many of them can't get the help they need. Our tutoring centers are being cut, our computer labs are being cut, and they can't get the help that they need. In addition, some of their assignments are being asked to be given electronically, and with the computer labs cut on the weekend, some students don't have computers, and this is a huge problem for those students. Lastly, I want to ask you to consider where you want your tax dollars spent. Do you want those dollars to increase, for example, the size of our prisons and police our state, or would you rather have affordable and accessible places for your children, your grandchildren, and community members to grow, learn, and become contributing members of society? At the rate our tuition is increasing, along with added fees and fees that continue to increase, we can't sustain the mission of providing affordable, quality education. Again, I'm just asking you to help all in our community and look to our future. We need at least $529 million. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Darla Hicks. I'm with Lane Community College. And before I start, I just want to mention that there are 15 students here from Mount Hood and Lane Community College that paid out of our student funds for the buses to come up here that had to return and that didn't get to speak. And just want to make sure that they are represented here fully, that we definitely took out of our day for this. Okay, so on to mine. I'm a student at Lane Community College. I'm here because of the imminent budget crisis for higher education that would be made if the Ways and Means current budget is passed. I'm concerned with the disinvestment in the higher education. I understand there's a need to balance the budget and that revenue is the most important thing to our state, but if the legislators want to disinvest in school funding, then there will be a decline in college graduates that will be able to contribute to the revenue of our state. The drastic cuts mean loss of programs, faculty, and student services. It will become more difficult as a student to get through college in a timely manner. I want to mention Lane Community College themselves would cut $9 million from the budget. If at $529 million, they're looking about $1 million budget cut. I thank you for your approval of the shared responsibility model. That's great, but the budget for the colleges, in simple terms, means the alienation of low-income students and minority students. The Aspire program is zero-funded, and that program is essential to bring in the students that would receive the SRM. But in conjunction with the SRM, you only get for 4 years. The classes are not available due to budget shortfalls. Students will be in school longer and may not be able to graduate at that point because the grant's not there at the end of their schooling. I am a non-traditional student. I'm a single mom. I work two jobs. I take 18 credits and have a GPA of about a 3.6, and I'm transferring to the U of L to go in their planning public policy management school. I'm currently $15,000 in debt. That's at community college, and if tuition keeps going up and programs are cut, the state is going to make students want to go elsewhere to places where they are funded and seen as the economic future of the state. If the question is where are we going to get this money, then let's look for effective and efficient ways of getting more revenue into our state budget. I'm aware of the current minimum tax is $10, but where is the effectiveness and efficiency in not having the businesses in Oregon put revenue into our budget so that the communities that they hire from have quality educated employees that are sending them to the workforce? To me, that just makes sense. The colleges and universities provide the workforce and will in turn reinvest in our state. So I ask that you do the same. Invest in us. We are the workforces of the future, and we are the state revenue of the future. If the disinvestment continues, then it will be mine and my son's generation that will have to pay for the wayward priorities of the present.
Thank you, Ms. Hicks. And just please tell the students that had to go back that the good news is there's a lot of solidarity and a lot of other people who are doing the same thing. It wasn't for want of, you know, we didn't want to testify.
I understand. I just wanted to mention
But I think you remind them that there are so many people who are supporting community college, so that's something important. And also, just FYI, the shared responsibility model passed out of the Senate, I think, but it's not.
I meant
so,
you guys approve.
Okay. We just want to make sure.
Your guys' approval
for the record.
Yes.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. My name is Paul Fisher, and I'm here to encourage you to allocate the $529 million in state support for community colleges. I am president of the OEA Community College UniServe Council, and I represent educational professionals at 9 different community colleges. I've been a full-time faculty member of Rogue Community College since 1997, and I've been teaching in community colleges in California and Oregon since 1981. 3 myths are being circulated about community colleges in the current press. Some are telling us that community colleges have a curriculum that is not rigorous. Others say community colleges are strategically and operationally mismanaged. And a final group mimics the mantra that the funding formula is a threat to community college viability. All 3 of these myths are inaccurate and tear at the fabric of our educational system. Community colleges have a trilateral responsibility of providing community education, professional technical training, and curriculum for transfer to 4-year universities. It's also important to remember that community colleges provide a safety net for students not completing their high school graduation requirements. This broad mission requires a broad curriculum. It is disingenuous to simply say the curriculum is too basic for the state to support. Attached is my business statistics final project scoring rubric as an example of some of the work that students successfully complete. Curriculum is developed for many different reasons and is for many different types of students. Care needs to be taken when commenting about the sophistication of curriculum for community college students. The second myth is that community colleges are not strategically and operationally efficient. There is no question that every community college spends a great deal of effort and focus on being efficient and consistent. One factor that is not commonly recognized is the lag time between action and the consequences of that action. In education, it is common to make decisions 3 or 4 years in the future, The decisions we make today will have impacts far out on the horizon. For the past 5 years, we've been working on the financial shortfalls created by Measure 5. We're still attempting to work through those kinds of shortfalls. I'm running out of time, so I will stop. The third piece is the funding formula, and I was one of 2 faculty representatives on the distribution formula committee, and we looked at a whole variety of different metrics, and we ended up with the FTE because it was understandable and it was consistent. The funding formula does hurt some colleges, but the fact is, if we got our funding up to $561 million, where it should be, we would be in much better shape. The funding formula does work if we can fund it fully. The State Board has requested $529 million, and that's what the OEA and all the 9 community colleges that I represent, that's the number that we're supporting. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and sorry for the oversight to not have you up here. Okay, last panel, and then tomorrow we will also, we'll have public testimony tomorrow. We'll have a meeting, and if folks who didn't have an opportunity today are welcome to do public testimony tomorrow. I'd like to call up Bob Tom, Jamie Wilson, and Ernie Keller.
Hello, my name is Ernie Keller. I'm the owner-manager of E&G Keller Development. I develop property, put in streets and sewers and that sort of thing. And I might add that I've been in the Dalles for about 30 years. My LLC is registered in both Washington and Oregon. And I find that every project I do is slow to a crawl because of the lack of trained craftspeople. I know that Columbia Gorge trains in the area of nursing. I was just proud as can be to hear some of our nursing students come in here and talk about what they're doing. We've worked with microelectronics students. We've trained those folks. You've heard about our wind energy program. If we have adequate funding, we could train as many as another 380 up to 400 people for wind energy programs. There happens to be a federal program. Oh, by the way, it's not just a matter of bringing other people in from California, because they're not available, or Washington, or wherever. We will do like the dean of doctors. We'll try to bring people in from out of the country. There's a federal program that allows that. And you read about it about a month ago in the Wall Street Journal. I really resent bringing in people from India, China, Europe, or elsewhere when we have good-paying jobs that our local people could be trained for. It's really hard to do, and if I sound like I've got a little bit of righteous indignation in my voice, I do. It's a really a serious problem to throw those opportunities away. And I know it's getting late, and I think that's the main point that I want to make. We've got a real opportunity here. And I guess I just want to say one other thing. Terry Armentrout, who was here earlier, he was really very modest. This is a man who was the manager of 80% of the power for the whole Northwest. And he was very supportive of the college and always has been, and I appreciate him taking the day to come down here. Thank you.
As do we, and we appreciate your coming down here too, Mr. Keller.
Me first? Okay. Mr. Chair, representatives of the committee, thank you for having me here today. This is my third committee meeting that I've sat in on and hope to testify for, and the first time I've gotten to speak in front of you. And I was running out of suits, so I'm really glad that you guys let me up here at the very last second. This is wonderful. This is my testimony. My name is Jamie Wilson. I'm a second-year student at Lynn-Benton Community College. I'm a biology major. I'm here today to support the funding of community colleges. I have been told that the $529 million is the best dollar amount for us to be at, and also the capital construction budget. I'd like to share with you my testimony about the opportunity that community college has given to me. During my high school years, my family and my teachers always emphasized the importance of a high school diploma. You must graduate high school, Jamie, you must. And in general, school was pretty easy for me. I got A's, even though I cut class and dabbled in drugs starting at age 13. With a high school diploma only months away, I moved out of my parents' house at age 15 and graduated on the honor roll a year early my junior year without really a ton of effort. I got what I thought would be a temporary job. Job at a sandwich shop with part-time minimum wage. Going off the words of my teachers, I was under the impression that I could get a better job if I just went out and interviewed. Needless to say, I was astonished when I didn't get a single call back from any interviews with my glorified high school diploma. The bills were piling up quickly, and the paychecks weren't sufficient. Depression crept up slowly, and the fear of failure seemed to be my new best friend. Stay off the streets, I ended up moving into the basement of a three-bedroom house that was co-rented by a bunch of adolescent, mostly males, where drugs and alcohol were a common pastime. And eventually, unfortunately, this lifestyle became my release for the failure that I felt as a person. After a few years of substance abuse and barely hanging on to my part-time minimum wage job, I found myself anorexic and severely depressed. After running into some old classmates at Subway, where I was working, who had been sent to OSU by their wealthy parents, I began to wonder if there were options for people like me. I moved to Albany to get away from the drugs, and community college ended up being the option that got me out of that lifestyle. I began to save money for my job, and I paid for my first term out of pocket at LBCC in the spring of 2005. Today, I continue to pay for my education 100% out of pocket while working full-time. I've completed 54 credits, maintain a 4.0 GPA. I'm a member elect of the student government for next year, an educated voter, a taxpayer, and someday I'll be a doctor in this local community for my children and the children of the people that I attend community college with. The affordability of community college enabled me to turn my life from disaster and substance abuse to one with promise of a better future and a well-paying job through a college degree. And I would encourage you not to forget about us after K through 12. That's one of the most critical times in a lot of people's lives, including myself. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Third time's a charm. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Okay, Mr. Tom.
Milatri, Nayadash. Question. Good afternoon. Glad to be here. Committee. I come here and I'll take some time and give you another perspective. I've heard many wonderful stories today from people, success stories, and heard about the needs from many of our industries and people that employ the people from Oregon. And I've heard a lot of symptoms. And I think we're all here about the solution to the symptoms is the funding. We hear these symptoms and the solution, we need to talk about the solution, which is adequate funding. And so I'm here to support this new figure I heard of 561. I worked for the tribe, for my tribe, for 17 years. And I'm from a tribe whose tribe education is a value, and family. It's a value for families too. And as a tribe, we want to be self-governance, we want to be independent, we want our tribal members to be independent and then interdependent. And we realize that education did that. And I think if the state of Oregon wants to be a sovereign nation and wants to, take its rightful place, the education of the members of the state is the only way to do that, is to give members access to education. And so in my tribe, when I was the education director, we topped out at age 27. When in the nation, the demographics, there were more older people than younger people. And I think in the Indian tribes, you'll find there's more younger people than older people. And I think that may be true in some of the other minority groups, where there's more younger people than older people. And so 15 years ago, we started preparing for this bubble that's coming up. And I think that isn't being dealt with our state budgets. We have, just jokingly say sometimes to people in education institutes that you need to educate minority people to where they can get jobs that pay $25, $30, or $50 an hour versus $8 an hour. And help support that Social Security system. And education is the way that we're going to do that. And so, as a tribal person, there's 9 tribes in Oregon, and there's community colleges closest to most of those tribes. And as I look at, my mom's from Celeste, my dad's from Grand Ronde, and as I look at our tribes, I can see tribal members that are working for the tribe that have PhDs, masters, and bachelors. I can see people that have vocational associate degrees and certificates. And I can just see how many of our tribal members are working for the tribe. And that makes us as a community a lot more healthier. And so I'm here. I know that community colleges, when they first came around, there was an intent to have about 25% of the students looking for transfer degrees, and that a lot of the courses would support the community, be it vocational or a special interest. And whatever happened to the public four-year institutes, now I think one of the burdens of community colleges is how many students are going to community colleges to transfer as a junior. And I think it hurts that local community in terms of vocational training and just special adult education. And I think that was one of the intents, and I think it's in budget times, I think it's good to go back to why, community colleges came about. The concept of community college is wonderful, and I look at them all around the state of Oregon, and I can say that the Celeste tribe had a tribal member attend and graduate from every community college in the state of Oregon. And that's where their home was, and they were able to live there and to go to school there and to remain there. And so I think that,
Mr. Tom,
we need to look at the strength of community college and what it means to the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I want to thank all of you for your patience. I wanted to thank Senator Morrison, Representative Jensen, who were here way over time, and Mr. Bender and Mr. Sorensen. And we will be having public testimony again tomorrow, us beginning at 3 o'clock. So apologies if you weren't able to testify today. So with that, I'm going to close the public testimony.